Hi, and welcome back to Walking with Your Body and Mind. I'm Colleen Wall, and I'm here with my colleague Sarah Donahue. And
Hi.
today's episode is about the overarching theme, sometimes called a principle, of inner outer. And this idea of inner outer is built into or embedded. It's probably a better word. It's embedded throughout the Laban Bartynyev movement studies system. And last episode, Erin talked about the adventures of her octopus body and guided and facilitated our sort of explorative understanding of like the center radiating out through the distal edges and this gushy inner guttural knowing that permeates the whole of us, supported by the center. And inner outer, I think, threads or like sort of overarches this octopus body idea. And so, yeah, today we're going to talk about inner outer. And I think, Sarah, you're in the hot seat. I hadn't prepared this.
Okay.
But when you think about inner outer, what comes to mind for you? Any first impressions?
Yeah, I think my first thought about inner outer is how my environment affects me. And as I move through the day or zoom out like a week or a month or your life, like how you move through the world and how you enter different environments and how those affect you, like how the space around you or the vibration in that space or the energy or the effort in that space or the people in that space or the trees or the dirt, whatever the environment is, how that really does permeate and affect the inner. And sometimes I think it's like, I think we don't always notice it, or a lot of times probably we don't notice it, but I think we are affected by that sort of thing. You know, the difference between say like being in like a crowded elevator or a crowd of people, and how that outside environment, what that might do to your like breath patterning or to the way you're holding your body or moving your body. And then you take that and go whoom, like out into, and I'm definitely saying like preferences here and biases, like I don't like crowded elevators, but if I went like out into like a wide open, you know, meadow in the mountains, one of my like favorite places to be, how that environment like pretty much automatically, I feel like it settles my nervous system. I feel like the vibration matches my inner vibration like more closely, maybe. So that's my first take on that.
Yeah, I think that's the real seed of inner outer. And I think as you're speaking, I'm also thinking about how my inner landscape, that these things are in a dynamic interplay. What's out there, outer is other. It's a space, it's a place, it's not the self. And that the inner is like a sensory environment. It's an inner affect. It's maybe private thoughts, private emotions. And that in a way, our skin and our body is the bridge between these two. And so what you are discussing is like how the outer, the other person, the people, the world, those places I'm in, affect how I feel and experience my inner world. And then also, I think that there's how my inner world can change or shape or create my outer world. And so, I mean, I have had the experience of going to somebody's house and feeling like, oh my gosh, this is totally your house. Like nobody else could have this house. And people have said that to me about my own house. That we also are designing and shaping consciously or unconsciously the places that we inhabit, and even the clothes we wear, right? Like the clothing we wear, the like pencils we pick, that our inner is making choices or drawing us towards a pattern that's manifested in our material outer, but it's coming from some thing inside of us. And it, when it doesn't, there feels like there's this maybe incongruity, like, oh, I just don't like that, or I don't feel like myself. And so that this body is like, it's the bridge, and the inner outer dialogue both shapes and affects our movement, and our movement then affects how we feel inside, or affects, like, it's actually my moving body that built the deck. Like, my body actually also shapes the world in which I live. And that reminds me of this Winston Churchill quote, which I don't totally remember, but it's something like, we design and build our buildings, and then they shape us.
Yeah.
That we make
our spaces we live in are designed for, well, then they're designed for many different things. Just that, like, general space of like a stadium versus a tent versus like all the different, yeah, buildings that we can design, and how they give us, you know, a kind of a pathway toward what happens in those spaces, or yeah, what's possible.
Yeah, what they tell us what to do in them, how to engage in them. So, for people listening, before we dive in more, take a second. First, close your eyes. Let's actually start with the inner. So, close your eyes and notice what's happening underneath the skin, in the feelings inside of you. Anything emotional that's been running through you? Any sort of private thoughts or images, or like the kind of thing that's like a wish you have for yourself, or something you don't want, that runs through you as you move through the day? So what's happening in that inner landscape? And then also the sensations of the body, like what parts of the body feel dense, condensed, kind of like ice? Are there other parts that feel more liquidy, softer? And there are other parts that feel like they're floating, like evaporating away. Is there pain in some places? Is there a feeling of expansiveness in some places? Also, what sensations of support do you have where your body is settling down? Maybe what places of floating upward? So there's inside you, there's an inner landscape that all day long is changing throughout your life. And if you haven't, start to attend to the outer. You may feel the feeling of the air around you, the temperature, the feeling of the parts of you that are supported, like where, what is the support below you? You can also open your eyes, noticing the place that you currently occupy physically, the place your body is in. And notice how this outer world, what's most important about it? Like, what catches your attention first? What are some of the structures of it? How is it set up and designed? If you had to think about, answer the question, how does this space encourage you to move? Maybe where does it cluster movement energy, and what kind? What's it contained in this space? And then within that, like, what's it feel like? How's the space feel? What's it make you feel uniquely about this space? And so this interplay, this dialogue between my inner landscape and my outer landscape. I mean, it's interesting to me that Irmgard Bartenieff titled her book Coping with the Environment, Body Movement, Coping with the Environment. Because I think she's speaking to how our movement is this both expressive and functional interplay constantly between what's happening inside of us and what we need to do out there to make ourselves, to make our lives work. And, you know, I'm thinking about maybe somebody telling me something I don't want to hear and the way I might recoil in. That's a motor expression of like, oh man, now I got to deal with that, or needing to get something out of myself from the inner to express it out, to talk to somebody. The way that that, like, we really need to talk about this. I just got to get this off my chest. And so the way that we are working with this, this like constant within ourselves, and other terms that come up sort of psychologically are things like, that person is really easily permeable. They're really affected, right? It's like what's happening around them, like it gets into the heart and the guts really easily. Or that person has really strong boundaries. They're really unaffected. And so we're talking here about how things are moving through between the inner and the outer, and the outer and the inner.
Yeah, it's interesting how there's certain like judgment on those metaphors as well. You know, that like in our culture, in our society, like is it considered a good thing to be like easily affected, or to have strong boundaries, or to have rigid boundaries, you know? And I think also it kind of depends if you're a man or a woman, that sort of you know, bias that goes into that a bit, but there's like, it's more than just like a metaphor. There's also the like the judgment around it, or the like, that's not the right word really, but how that is viewed by others and how it's valued, I guess.
And it is, it's valued. It's like, does this person like that or not? And then once we move past that boundary of like permeable, strong boundaried, hardened, there's the like this sort of value or judgment of like, that person really knows themselves, as if they've spent a lot of time working through the inner, but they have a strong sense of self, or like they really understand what's happening, like, you know, like almost like they have a strong understanding of the outer. And how we may peg people, like, yeah, they really get what's going on here, or they have no sense of what's going on here, but they really got a sense of themselves. And so like, there's this modulating also between inner sensitivity and outer out there. And I think that we're often layering or making sense, making those judgments based on how we see somebody moving and responding to things. Like kind of the snap judgments or snap interpretations based on how they're inhabiting their body in relationship to knowing inner, maybe keeping the inside really in though, or seeing what's happening. Are they articulating it?
Definitely. I mean, even just upon meeting someone, you might have a feeling of where they might fall on like a gradient between, if we were like kind of polarize this, like a gradient between having strong or rigid boundaries and being just like open and permeable and vulnerable. Like you might get a sense of that like pretty quickly when you meet someone. And then I guess the next question is like, do you know everything there is to know? Like, are you making some wild assumptions?
Are you making some wild assumptions? And then like, how are those assumptions like coloring what you think this person is? And I think part of being adults is that we can modulate this all day long. That's the ideal, as we need to, as serves us and serves our relationships. So again, listeners, as you hear this, you may want to just check in with your own ability to modulate the boundary. And so you may, as you've sort of checked in with the inner environment, you've gotten to know yourself, as well as notice this outer environment. Now notice the ability, maybe it's, you can think of it in a level of your skin, to imagine that there's a dialogue. So maybe the inner could ooze, like the feelings inside of you could ooze out of your skin, move through the pores to affect the outer. So I'm imagining here as I say this, that there's this calm inner core of me that moves out of my skin and becomes the feeling in this room. And as I imagine that, I actually feel like there's some papers that I want to move around to be more coherent with the way I want this room to feel, if it's in alignment with that sense of calm centeredness. And on the other side, you may also stay with that easy porousness, looking at the space around you and letting the messages of it sort of come into you, like what this room says and how it speaks to you is allowed to move into your inner environment, your inner affect. It affects you. And then we can shift now this towards the other end of the polarity, which is towards hardening that boundary. And so you may imagine that the skin gets harder and you're like, nope, what's inside of me is in here. What's outside of me is out there. And these worlds are unaffected. And so I think I can be sturdy and calm inside of me. And what's the chaos of the to-do list or out there doesn't have to get inside. And so we can play between both the inner and outer and the way we're letting them dialogue or not dialogue.
Yeah, and that goes back to that value idea in an interesting way, you know, that like rigidity is maybe not considered a good thing, you know, or depending on, you know, who you are and where you are, but I might, you know, if I am out in the woods and I am camping and I hear something large step on a branch and break it, like I might have a sense of a rigid boundary. And that might serve me and protect me and allow me to organize myself and get away from the bear or whatever it is. So yeah, just it's making me think it's very situational and just to, like the awareness of it and the ability to modulate it and organize it, something that could be helpful.
Yeah, and to make clearer choices around it. Like, do we want, if I know how much my environment and care about how much my environment affects my internal experience, then I'm responsible for designing the spaces that I can in a way that I get to have the inner environment and inner affect that I want. That there's a choice in this. And also, if I cannot design that space, like, what is it that I can do inside of myself or in small ways so that there's a feeling of coherency between this inner and outer? Because we can't control it all, but we definitely can support ourselves in the ways that we can. And I wanted to read a little bit of Peggy Hackney's section on inner outer from her book, Making Connections, Total Body Integration Through the Vartinia Fundamentals. And I also have a small story to share. But this is comes from this section of Peggy's book. Many people also spend time trying to deny that they are influenced in any significant way by the rhythm, pace, love, violence, etc., of other people in the outer world. And thus, the principle that inner reflects outer might be distressing. I sometimes pretend that I am not affected by tightly scheduled days or hostile comments, that I am cool, calm, and collected. However, usually in such situations, if I check in with my own movement, I find that I have tightened my core, have started breathing in a shallow way, and that my movement is less coordinated. I might state this realization in this way. I know that how I move affects my environment, and that my outer environment is in interaction with my inner experience. As opposed to being upsetting, this principle of inner outer can also be uplifting to many people. It is frequently a relief to recognize that coherence exists between inner and outer, and that movement has significance. We do not have to ignore it and pretend that movement is not happening. This realization is empowering and engenders a sense of aliveness in people. Let's take a basic example. When I notice that my foot is urgently tapping the floor as I sit in a long meeting, if I acknowledge that it has meaning, It might lead me to recognize that a part of me is already mobilized and ready to go. In fact, I'm already running to my next commitment inside of myself. I could then clarify this verbally for other people who might have detected that I'm not totally present in the meeting. It will be confirming for all of us to hear me say, I'm ready to go. A more general statement of the realization of inner outer might be stated. Since inner and outer are in relationship and movement is meaningful, I might as well enjoy the fact that I really chose to listen to or see the coherence and use movement to help me make sense out of what is going on. Perhaps I can learn something about what I feel or know by observing how I move in a given situation or how others move. Indeed, Laban felt that some values of our civilization are surely influenced, if not produced, by the fact that we do not pay more attention to human movement, bodily and mental, which is obviously at the basis of all human activity. So this has me really thinking about how I can feel often in my tissues the choice to do something that I can, when presented with a decision or a conversation, I can feel that the conversation isn't closed yet, when in my tissues there's still a churning to get it out, like that something hasn't come to the end of that conversation. Or I can feel when somebody offers something and I can't speak, that I can say, I can't talk about this yet. I need some time to be with myself. And so the idea that the body internal environment is speaking to us through movement, and as we can pay attention to the movement, that there's something that helps us know the direction we need to go. It's like the body has a way of revealing what's subconscious, and it's the movement that helps us know what is needing to become more conscious.
Yeah, that's so great. Just that, like that paying attention and that listening, which I don't think is something that we do like in our society naturally, or we don't, it's not something we're taught to do. Something that maybe we're, that gets like deleted somewhere along the line. But I was just thinking how, you know, like babies before there's language, like you get all the information you need by the way they wiggle around, you know, like they're telling you exactly what they need through their movement. Like it just comes out immediately. The only way they can communicate. But yeah, and then maybe it becomes more subtle as we get older, but it's still there. Like that's still that sense of like listening to like, oh yeah, there's a tightening in my chest or in my throat, or oh, why am I clenching my fist? Or why am I, you know, like, why have my shoulders gone up? Or, you know, those are all kind of like.
Yeah. The what's happening inside of me in my movement, like what's happening in my movement that's giving me cues to what's going on inside of me. Feels like it's part of what we're talking about here. And it's, there is this constant dialogue of inner outer, and we can speak to it theoretically, which we have, but it's that it actually, its import lands when we start paying attention to our moving sensate lives. And, you know, this is going back, I can't believe I'm going to share this, but years and years and years ago, like I was probably 16, 15, I was, I somehow made videos on a VHS camcorder recorder thing, because I wanted to see myself dance, and I couldn't figure out what was going on at the center of my body, but I could see that it was like wobbly, like that there wasn't connection, and I didn't really know how to address it, but I remember looking at that and thinking, wow, there's something not working here. And I would like try to harden it and tighten it more, and I'd record it and watch it again, and I could not sort it out. And it was fairly recently that I was working on the icosahedron, which is a large structure that I use in my studio that we'll talk about, that's connected to the Laban work we'll talk about someday. And I was watching myself move, and I was like, oh my gosh, I have a core now. I mean, here it is 25 years later, and I was like, I know how to feel supported and initiate movement from my core. It's finally sequencing through. And so that felt like there was something in observing that change. And of course, it's happened over time, but like observing that change in myself that helped me feel the truth of like having a sense of sort of knowing that I have guts and I can move my guts into the world, which was something that I think I avoided for a long time. And so this sense of like, and all the movement work that I've done, all the motor patterning that I've done has probably helped significantly develop that core without it being like doing crunches, because I have not done a crunch since I was also probably that age, unless forced in dance class where I probably had a fit. So that there's a sense that then having that strong, for me, what feels like a sense of us knowing where I am or who I am, then permeates the relationships that I work to have with people.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting to feel, to start to notice those, how you perceive the relationships of others as well. And like, yeah, if you connected with someone on that like core level, how much information you would get.
Yeah, that's really interesting to think about. But like we say that, like sometimes like we connect deeply. Like I feel like that's a way of saying I feel like I know who they are in their core and mine can meet and match them. So these ideas are like they thread through our language. And I think, yeah, this Sarah, what you said before. I shared that story also brought me to this sort of thing, this last idea that I think I'd love to hear if you have anything to add to this. But the idea is that in motor development, so that when the infant is first developing, like they're going through the patterns, the sequence that they're determined to go through, like in a certain sense, hardwired to go through to learn how to walk and exist in the world. Everything that happens physically precedes something psychologically. So as they go, as they start to reach out, like elongate into space to reach and grasp and pull something into themselves, you know, it's the doing of that on a motor level. The movement out to the world to grasp something, to bring it back in, that teaches them to see something out there, move towards it, take it into themselves, and either then pull it in or pull themselves towards it. Like it teaches them to satisfy their desires. It teaches them to want something, aspire towards it, and move towards it. And so, but they can't know that psychologically or intellectually until they've done it on a motor level. And so that this idea of inner outer is in such an interplay on a our earliest motor development that then translates into who we are as adults.
Yeah, and that I'm just thinking that very, very first connection to outer in a way is like through your core. It's like literally through your navel. That connection through the umbilical cord to other starts at your core. And your whole world is like organized around the center of your body. And like how meaningful that must be. You know, as we keep developing and moving through life, like why this is such a meaningful place in our bodies.
Yeah, I mean, it's our primary source of, it's our first source of nourishment. And then, I mean, think about that transition of from the central nourishment of the umbilical cord. And then you go out into the world and like you're in this new space and you spend the rest of your life working through the movement, the motor patterns to cope with that environment, that new challenging environment, every stimuli, everything you see, every smell of milk that then becomes, you know, a cup of coffee in the morning. Like,
Yeah. And then being your environment being, oh, someone put you down on the floor. Oh, someone's holding you and enclosing you in their arms. And like how all those different shaping experiences, how you're as a baby, you are responding to them, pushing away from the floor, letting yourself be enclosed around or, you know, pushing away, or all of the different like interactions with outer. That you are taking in information, even though you're prelingual, and you're taking in information, and it's teaching use something every day about your inner responses. And then your inner responses, lots of times bursting out with information back to the world.
These sensations are the foundations of our perceptions. They become, oh, that firm embrace means love, or that firm embrace means too much. You know, they become the underpinnings, those sensations of how we then make sense out of what we see and experience. And it's, I think, partially why you, Sarah, and I could be in the same environment, and you have one interpretation. Like, you know, you might see that one person be like, that person's boundaries are way too hard. And I'm like, really? I love being around them. I know exactly where I stand, because we have different baselines that we come in with from that.
Totally. Yeah. Great. I was thinking too, just with this, like, that thing where like thinking about the permeable, you know, connection between inner and outer, and those times when we try to, like, when we don't let something out, you know. And of course, like crying is such a like clear example, because it's like, oh no, here it comes, and we try to like hold it in and hold it in. Like, literally it's like trying to get out of your body, and then sometimes it will eventually, right? It will burst forth. And you can, like, in kids, there's less of the social, like, oh, you're not supposed to cry, or, you know, so it does burst forth and more often. And then, you know, as adults, we learn, oh, I can't really let it burst forth in that environment, but when I get in my car, it's going to come out. So it's like laugh, or sometimes like laughing. If, you know, if you've ever been around someone who's had like kind of like an inappropriate laugh, I'm saying that in like air quotes, like it just had to come out, and you like it needed to release from your inner to that outer environment.
Yes. And that even if we're trying to repress or deny it, that it's that churning inside eventually. I remember at my grandmother's funeral, like, there was a lot of laughter and one family member, but there's also a lot of like darkness and pain that was, I think, underneath that. And one family member said to me, yeah, behind every laugh is a scream. And I was like, yeah, that's very much what it felt like to me. But other people may have just really been in the laughter of it, depending on what other things were there. So yeah, that if it all stays too in or stays too out, that that maybe there's a sense of non-releasing out and non-coherence.
Yeah. Or it's like, that's maybe like how we keep our equilibrium. In a way, you know, that it's like it has to kind of keep moving and flowing, and not if it's, you know, if it's in there too long, it's going to come out, or things, you know, if we ignore what's outside for too long, they're going to make their way in.
kind of blast in. It's going to get expressed some other way. Like you said, it's going to pop out, or like eventually I can only hold it so much that, yeah, something has to be dealt with.
Cool.
With that, thank you all.
Yeah, thanks, Colleen. This
is thank you, Sarah. All right, we'll be back in a couple weeks.
Woo, okay.
Living with your body and mind.
Bye.